out there for a while, to do what I could. A smile touched Nerissa's lips. You're not the only one who's been given a second chance in this life. I'd been using mine the best I could. How curious. I'd like to hear more about that one day. One day, Nerissa agreed. A thought occurred to Amara. Did you see my brother? Briefly. I told him what you did, and that you'd helped us save Lissa. And what did he say? Not much, Nerissa grimaced. You are right. He will need time to find forgiveness in his heart for you. The very heart that I stabbed, Amara thought. I don't think an eternity will be enough time, she said. Perhaps. But we all make our choices and then must deal with the consequences, whatever they are. Yes. So very true. So many choices and so many consequences. Tell me, Nerissa said after they walked in silence for a while. Did you ever dream of anything in your life beyond being Empress? Amara considered this. To be honest, no. The only real option for me was marriage, but I'd put it off as long as I could. I suppose before I became Empress, I was waiting for the right powerful man that I knew I'd be able to control and manipulate. Nerissa considered this. And now? Now I have no idea what I'm supposed to do with the rest of my life. The sea air was warm and smelled like salt. She breathed in the unexpected freedom that she knew she didn't truly deserve. Why would you leave Cleo to come back here? I know she depended on you and considered you a true friend. The princess doesn't need me anymore, Nerissa replied simply. Amara couldn't help but laugh at this. And I do. Nerissa took Amara's hand in hers, squeezing it. Yes. Actually, I think you do. Amara looked down at Nerissa's hand. She didn't try to pull away. So, Nerissa said when the docks came into view up ahead. Where do you want to go now? Amara smiled at the sheer number of possibilities that now lay ahead of her. Opportunities she never thought possible. But perhaps, somewhere along the line, in some small way, she might find a way to redeem herself. Everywhere, she said. Chapter 36 Cleo, Lemeros. Ouch! Apologies, Your Highness. Lorenzo Tavera finally finished lacing up the back of Cleo's gown so tightly that she could barely breathe. I don't remember it being this uncomfortable during our previous fitting, she said with a grimace. Discomfort is temporary, he told her. The beauty of silk and lace is forever. If you say so. He took a step back from her, clasping his hands together with joy. Absolutely stunning! My greatest creation to date! She took a moment to admire the gown in the mirror before her. The skirt consisted of layer upon layer of delicate, violet-colored silk and satin, like the petals of a rose. Golden threads woven through the material created a near-magical sheen whenever the gown caught the light. Several seamstresses, and Lorenzo himself, had spent weeks embroidering graceful birds in flight over the bodice. They were hawks, which Cleo appreciated. Hawks were the symbol of Uranus, the symbol of watchers and of immortality. They were every bit as meaningful to Cleo as the phoenix was to Cretians. Life, Iranians had learned in the days following the Kindred's deadly siege upon the city, was about love, about friends and family, and about not putting one's own desires above the well-being of another person, no matter who they are.
Cleo gently stopped one of her two attendants from tugging at her hair in an impossible attempt to make it perfect. Her scalp felt as if it had been set aflame. Half of her golden locks had been coiffed into an intricate series of braids, the other half left free and flowing down her shoulders and back. Lorenzo had requested that all her hair be up so the crowd waiting outside in the palace square could appreciate the beauty of the gown that he'd made by hand, but she much preferred to wear her hair just like this.
"I think we're done," Cleo said as she looked at her reflection.
She had mostly recovered from the ordeal of being possessed by the Water Kindred. The only remaining sign was one faded blue tendril along her temple. One of her attendants, a girl from Turia, told her it looked like a painted adornment worn by her ancestors during the half-moon celebrations. By the way she'd said it with such enthusiasm, Cleo took this to be a great compliment. Lorenzo smiled as Cleo moved toward the door.
"It's even more beautiful than your wedding gown, if I do say so myself."
"By a fraction, yes. I must agree. You are a genius."
That gown had been incredible, but she'd never had a moment to truly appreciate it. Today would be much different.
"I am a genius," Lorenzo agreed merrily. "This coronation gown is one that will be remembered throughout history."
"Without a doubt," she agreed, repressing a smile. Nick waited for her on the other side of the door impatiently.
"You took forever to get ready. Is that how queens are? Wait, now that I think of it, you always took forever to get ready even as a mere princess."
"You didn't have to wait for me, you know," Cleo said.
"But how could I miss a single moment of today?"
He walked beside her down the hall. Jonas was waiting at the other end as well, also ready to accompany her to the balcony, where she would be making her first speech as the Queen of Mitica.
"Are you sure you haven't changed your mind?" Jonas asked,
his arms crossed over his chest.
"Save your breath," Nick said to him. "I've tried to convince her otherwise during the entire trip here, but she refuses. If you ask me, this is the worst idea ever."
"Then it's very smart that I didn't ask you, isn't it?"
She smiled at him patiently.
"When is it that you're planning to leave on your journey to explore the world with Asha?"
"Not for another week."
He raised his eyebrows.
"Don't try to get rid of me yet, Cleo."
"Wouldn't dream of it."
Cleo cast a look at Jonas.
"So you are yet another protester?"
"It just seems..." Jonas spread his hands. "Problematic. At best. Then again, I'm not in favor of any ruler at all, let alone two who've chosen to equally share the throne."
Nick let out a grunt of frustration.
"Co-reigning with him. Do you have any idea how much trouble you're in for? Have you even looked at the history texts? It's never been done successfully before. Too much arguing, fighting, war even. Death and mayhem and blood and pain are a given. And that's best-case scenario."
"And that," Cleo said patiently, "is why we're going to take it one day at a time. And also why we've enlisted a very trustworthy council that won't be afraid to intervene if necessary."
So far, this council included Jonas as the Palcean representative, Nick representing Aranus, and Lucia representing Lamaris. The council would grow in time, but Cleo thought they were off to an excellent start. On their walk, they passed Olivia and Felix, who'd both come to live at the Lemarian Palace. Felix stayed at Magnus's request as a personal bodyguard for him and Cleo, and for any other problems they might need him to deal with on their behalf. Felix had enthusiastically agreed. Of course, Cleo truly wished such problems would be few and far between going forward. As for Olivia, Lucia had broken the news to her of what had happened in the sanctuary, that Timotheus was dead, the sanctuary destroyed, that all others of her kind no longer possessed the memories of their formerly immortal selves. After the initial shock and deep mourning over such an acute loss, Olivia consoled herself with the idea that she would be the one to keep the memory and history of the Watchers alive. Taryn had already departed Mitikan Shores, telling Cleo and Magnus that he wanted to rejoin the fight in Cretia. The revolution there had only just begun, and he knew he could help to overthrow an already shaky temporary government. And then there was Enzo. Looking handsome in his Red Guard's uniform, he nodded at Cleo as she passed him along the hallway. The fire mark on his chest had vanished immediately after the Kindred were banished from this plane of existence. He had joined them on their journey to Lemeros for their coronation, but insisted on returning to Aranis immediately after to help in the reconstruction of the Aranian palace. Cleo had a feeling it had a great deal to do with his desire to return to a pretty kitchen maid there at the palace who thought Enzo was the most wonderful man she'd ever met.
"Are they trying to talk you out of this?"
Magnus greeted Cleo as the trio turned the next corner.
"What an incredible shock!"
she started.
"You surprised me."
"Still need to get used to the twists and turns of this palace," he said. "Remember, you agreed to live here half of the year."
"That's one of the reasons this dress is lined in fur."
Magnus's appreciative gaze slid down the front of her and back up, meeting her own and holding.
"Purple."
"It's violet, actually."
He raised a brow.
"That's a Cretian color."
"It's a common color, that is, yes, used by Cretians."
"It reminds me of Amara."
"Ah, yes. Amara." Cleo had received a personal message from the former Empress from an undisclosed location, congratulating Cleo and Magnus on their victory against Kyan. Amara also conveyed that she hoped one day to see them again. Nerissa claimed that Amara had value and deserved a second chance. She'd even chosen to accompany Amara to parts unknown. Cleo had decided not to harbor any ill feelings toward Amara, but she didn't have any interest in ever seeing her again. But it was impossible to know what the future held. She looked up at Magnus.
"This shade of violet, Lorenzo tells me, is the perfect blend of Iranian blue and Lemurian red."
A smile touched his lips.
"As clever as you are beautiful."
Nick groaned.
"Perhaps I'll leave now. Why wait a week?"
"If you insist," Magnus said.
"I certainly won't try to stop you."
His gaze moved to Jonas.
"My sister is looking for you."
"Is she?"
Jonas asked. Magnus's lips twisted with disapproval.
"She is."
Jonas grinned mischievously.
"Well then, I'll have to see what she wants, won't I?"
He leaned toward Cleo and kissed her cheek.
"By the way, that shade of violet is my favorite, and you look gorgeous as usual."
Cleo couldn't help but notice that Magnus's eyebrows furrowed immediately whenever Jonas complimented her. Perhaps they always would.
"And you?"
Magnus eyed Nick.
"What about me?"
Nick shot back. A smile turned up the corner of his mouth.
"I might surprise you yet."
"Oh, you do surprise me,"
Nick replied.
"Constantly."
"Be good to her, or you'll have me to answer to, Your Majesty."
"Noted,"
Magnus replied. Then Nick and Jonas left them to take the remaining walk to the balcony in privacy.
"I still hate both of them,"
Magnus told her.
"Just so you know."
"No, you don't,"
Cleo replied with amusement. Magnus shook his head.
"What exactly is it that my sister sees in that rebel?"
She repressed a grin.
"If I have to tell you, it would be a waste of my breath."
Whenever Lucia wasn't spending time with her daughter, she seemed to be with Jonas. The only one who seemed to have a problem with this was Magnus.
"He'll get over it,"
Cleo thought.
"Probably."
The day after the Kindred had been defeated, they'd received a message from Nerissa explaining what had happened in Cretia. It said that Amara's grandmother had commanded the assassin to take the life of King Gaius, and that she'd arranged to have Lyssa kidnapped, making it seem as if it had been the Fire Kindred. A week later, Nerissa and Felix returned from their journey and delivered Lyssa into her young mother's grateful arms.
"I do like your hair like this. Very much."
Magnus twisted a long, loose golden strand around his finger as he pressed Cleo up against the wall of the corridor. They were inches away from the balcony where they would be addressing the cheering Lemurian crowds and making their first speech as king and queen.
"I know," she said with a smile.
He traced his fingers along the tendril that framed her temple. She gently touched a scar.
"Can we do this?"
she asked, a sliver of doubt creeping in.
"For real? Or are we going to fight every day about everything? We have vastly different outlooks on a million different subjects."
"Absolutely true," he said. "And I anticipate countless heated arguments that will stretch deep, deep into the night."
A grin pulled at his lips.
"Is it wrong that I look greatly forward to each and every one of them?"
Then he kissed her deeply, stealing both her breath and her thoughts. They would make this work. Mitica, Lemeros, Pelsia, and Oranos mattered to both of them. Their people mattered to them. And the future stretched before them, both frightening and enticing in far too many ways to count. Magnus took her hand in his, rubbing his thumb over the thin gold band she now wore, a near match for his own. When she'd questioned him about the rings, he'd insisted that it wasn't the bloodstone melted down and made into two rings. She didn't believe him, since she hadn't seen his thick gold ring since that fateful night. If she was right, Magnus had created the most powerful pair of wedding bands in history.
"Apologies for interrupting,"
a voice cut between them, making Cleo gasp against Magnus's lips.
"Valya," Magnus said with surprise. "You're here."
"I am."
The witch wore her long black hair loose. It cascaded down the back of her burgundy gown. Several guards who stood along the walls nearby didn't make a single move toward her.
"You didn't answer Prince Usher's summons when we needed you," he said darkly.
She smiled.
"Perhaps I did. Perhaps I'm answering that summons now. But what difference does it make? You survived, both of you. And you're ready to begin the rest of your lives together."
True enough, Cleo thought.
"But a little extra help would have been lovely."
"Why are you here?" she asked.
"I've come to give you a gift. A symbol of luck and prosperity for the future of Mitica under the new rule of its young king and queen."
Valya held out a small plant, its roots encased in a burlap pouch.
"What is it?" Magnus asked, eyeing it.
"A grapevine seedling," she said. "One that will yield perfect grapes year after year, just like those produced by the greatest vineyards of Pelsia."
"Much gratitude," Cleo said, taking the plant from the woman. "Alas, it will not last long if we don't get it into Pelsian soil soon."
"This one will do well, wherever you plant it. Even here in Lemeros,"
Valya said with confidence.
"I promise you that."
"Earth magic," Cleo guessed. Valya nodded.
"Yes, it certainly helps. And ever since the Kindred were defeated, I feel that my magic has increased. I am grateful for that."
It wasn't the first time Cleo had heard this claim. Lucia said her magic had also strengthened, that the drain that Lyssa had on it was no longer an issue for her.
"Will you be present for our speech?" Magnus asked.
Valya nodded again.
I plan to join those in the palace square now.
Excellent, he said. Much gratitude for your gift, Valya.
Cleo froze as the witch pressed her hand against Cleo's belly.
What are you doing?
She asked, taking a step back.
Your son will be very strong and very handsome, Valya said. And in time he will discover a great treasure, one that will benefit the world.
Our son?
Cleo began, sharing a shocked look with Magnus. Valya bowed her head.
All the best to you, Queen Cleona. King Magnus.
As the witch walked away, Cleo was certain she saw the brief flash of a gold dagger, one that looked very much like the dagger Lucia had used to destroy the kindred orbs in the sheath on her leather belt.
How strange, she thought.
But the thought quickly left her mind. She was focused on something else entirely that Valya had said.
Their son. Her gown had been so much tighter this morning,
and she hadn't been able to keep any breakfast down. But she'd decided that was due to her nerves about starting her and Magnus' coronation tour.
A son? Magnus asked, breathless. Did she just say something about our son?
Cleo tried to find her voice.
Yes, she did.
He searched her face, his eyes wide.
Is there something that you haven't told me yet?
She laughed nervously.
Perhaps we can discuss this in further depth after our speech?
A slow smile appeared on Magnus's face.
Yes, he said. Immediately after.
Cleo nodded, trying very hard to keep her happy tears at bay. Her hand in his, they approached the doors leading to the balcony.
Seeing Valya again, Cleo mused. Her face seems so recognizable to me, like I've seen it somewhere before.
Seen it where?
Magnus asked. Then it came to her.
That book. The one about your goddess I'd recently started to read. It had some of the most incredible illustrations I've ever seen. So detailed.
So who does the witch remind you of?
He asked.
Valoria herself, Cleo said, unable to contain her grin. Do you think it's possible that we were just given both a gift and a prophecy by your goddess of earth and water?
Can you imagine if that were really true?
That Valya was actually Valoria herself?
He laughed at this. How Cleo loved the rare sound of Magnus Demora's laugh.
You're right, she agreed. It's ridiculous. But they are both very beautiful.
Not nearly as beautiful as you are, my lovely queen.
Magnus leaned down and brushed his lips softly against hers.
Now, are you ready?
Cleo looked up into his face. The face of someone she'd come to love more than anyone or anything else in this world, in this life. Her friend, her husband, her king.
I'm ready, she said.
This is Fred Berman. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Immortal Reign, Book 6 in the Fallen Kingdom series by Morgan Rhodes. This program was directed by John McElroy, executive producer Juliana Wilson. Text copyright 2018 by Penguin Random House, LLC. Production copyright 2018, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.